Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with composer, conductor, and pianist Bramwell Tovey when he was in town to conduct the Philadelphia Orchestra. The program featured his trumpet concerto, Songs of the Paradise Saloon, which is based on the same story as his opera, The Inventor. I asked him which came first, the concerto or the opera.
Most of the opera was written in piano score before I embarked on Songs of the Paradise Saloon. I hadn't quite finished the opera in piano vocal score at that stage, but I hadn't begun orchestrating it. But I had various ideas, lots of ideas from the word go about the orchestration and the various colours that there should be and the use of the leitmotifs. So I suspended work on the opera for a couple of months while I wrote the trumpet concerto. It's called Songs of the Paradise Saloon, because I wanted to create the night before the actual scene in the opera, when everything was going sunningly well for Alexander Keith, and he was the master of all he surveyed in this bar, this famous bar in the middle of Manhattan that dated back to around the time of the American Civil War. I've often wondered that, you know, when you go to Carmen and you see the stabbing at the end, just try and imagine what it was like when the previous bullfight had happened. Just imagine when nothing was going wrong, when everything was happening, because by imagining those scenes, the effect of the drama is even greater. So in the Songs of the Paradise Saloon, everything is going very well for our hero, who's really an anti-hero. And so the sound of the orchestra, whilst it lacked the finality of the judgment, as it were, of the orchestra in the opera, it did have all the sparkle and all the fun of that New York scene.
So it's a piece from the story, but not from the actual opera.
That would be correct, yes. And the tune at the beginning that's played in the strings is smashed and fragmented, and then the variations are built out of the fragments. It's reassembled in the middle and then at the very end. But that is what I call throughout the opera, I call it the aspiration motif. So every time a character has a dream or an ambition or a hope or a wish, This little solo that's heard right at the beginning comes out of the texture. It's as if Sandy Keith is going around the whole bar and people are telling him their wishes and he's manipulating people. He was a combination between a terrible terrorist and a sort of Bernie Madoff character. He was a swindler, he was a murderer, he was an altogether unpleasant man. Absolutely ideal for the opera.
I was going to say, what drew you to him and his story?
It was funny, when I got commissioned by the Calgary Opera, I knew that they were going to ask me what I wanted to set. And I was in a Starbucks, actually, in Vancouver. I just had finished rehearsing. I went for coffee. There was a newspaper lying on the table, a National Post. I opened it up. There was a story in there, a new book by Ann Larrabee. She'd written about the character. And I'd never even heard of this man. He was an historical character. So basically, we took elements of his life story, which I then discovered were in the public domain but had not been properly researched or presented before. And then we gave life, John Morrell, the librettist, gave life to the characters. And as soon as I read the story, I thought, this is what I want to write about. And I looked at about 25 other stories, but I kept coming back to this one. I just had to get it out of my system.
Were you an actor, or have you been an actor?
No, never. But I've played, I've been a repetiteur in an opera company, so I've played and I've conducted lots and lots of operas, so I've been very much into it. And the spoken word to me is very much a part of my reading and who I am as a person. I love theatre, and to me, opera has to be theatre to really get off the ground. And that's why I was pleased to be able to invest something of the theatre in this particular concerto.
I thought of the question because when you said you liked to know what was happening before, I think sometimes actors, when they prepare, the backstory is very important to the character's development.
I agree. I think backstory is important. And I think a lot of directors talk about that in rehearsal. And I think as musicians, we're so keen to interpret text that sometimes when we come across something like this that has elements and details, for example, the Passacaglia, it's one thing to listen to it with the darkness of the viola bookends. But actually, when you think about the crowd and how the mob in the village of Aldborough went after Peter Grimes and were determined to hold him to account. I mean, we see that every day on Facebook and Twitter and in our societies. And we know what the mob is. The mob is, if anything, more dangerous now than it was back then. And when you have a clearly defined role for the mob and you have an isolated character, then you've got these polarized situations, which is what drama is about. Romeo and Juliet, a beautiful love situation, West Side Story. But of course, all this racism and this kind of hatred in the community.
So the listeners may appreciate the works, let's take your work, on different levels. You may walk in there and just listen to the music and appreciate it on that level. But it sounds as if it gives it another level if you kind of understand the story behind it.
Well, that's what's so great about music, isn't it? Even if you listen to a Beethoven symphony or a Mozart symphony, the basic message of the sound of the music is something that people can receive with absolutely no preparation whatsoever. But the more you listen to it, and that's what keeps orchestras ticking and alive and so relevant, the more you listen to a work, the more you understand the context of it, the more it has to offer you. Music addresses the inner narrative of each one of us. And whether it's dramatic music from the stage or whether it's music that's absolute music, pure and on its own terms, when we listen to music, there are so many depths. It's like people, you know, when we meet people and we look into their eyes and we talk to them, we begin to understand something of the depth of the person. But it takes more than a simple conversation to reach that point. And that's what, for me, is so thrilling about being a musician.
So when you worked with the orchestra with your piece, each of the instruments, I understand, represent a character in the scene. Did you talk to them about that?
A little bit. You know, this. I talked about the story and about the character of Alexander Keith. What's so incredible about this orchestra is that you don't have to speak in paragraphs to get what you want. You just have to look often, and you just give them a small gesture or a word or two or maybe a little quip here and there, and they totally get it. They've got such a great esprit de corps and a great spirit too, that they just catch everything that you want. It's an extraordinary group. And so I've talked with some of the individuals about it. I mean, it's not like Peter and the Wolf, which you know, the cat is the clarinet and the bassoon is the grandfather. But there is this element of struggle and hope and aspiration that's constantly dashed to the ground by this very, very nasty, unpleasant man, Alexander Keith. You know, all great con men are loved and trusted by everybody. Lance Armstrong, Bernie Madoff, they were heroes. They were extraordinary people that people believed in. The fact that they turned out to be shams and void and empty made what they did even worse. And in opera, when we portray that, that's a wonderful device for a composer, because I can show you how great a con man Alexander Keith was, and then when you watch the opera, you can see really what an untrustworthy SOB he really was.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.